And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and I'm joined by the most intrepid Starfinders this side of the galaxy.
I'm James. I wrote Code Switch one time.
And I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
Today, I'm pleased to introduce a guest who, honestly, needs no introduction. But we're going to introduce him anyway. Please welcome Starfinder Society developer Thurston Hillman. How you doing, Thirsty?
Can no longer mistake your infant child for a serial killer. Oh, sorry, I was reading the Crusader Games pre-patch notes.
That's hilarious. So, Thirsty, it's been a little bit of a while since we've had you here on the show. What's new with you up in all your Starfinder dealings?
I've been like super, super busy building up a season. I don't know, what are we on? Season 3 of Starfinder Society. So that's been coming along.
Excellent.
I did some kind of like class that I wrote, I guess. That was pretty cool. I mean, like, we can gloss over that. That's, you know, not
who
not
could
much.
Have thought that you would just be still doing this late into 2020. Who would have anticipated?
Yeah. Like, I've no love of this job at all. I just do it for the paycheck.
I do it for the paycheck. Oh.
That's why they pay me the slightly medium bucks. Yeah.
slightly medium bucks. Nice.
The thing about mediums is they can also tell the future.
They can. And I hear that the future is very bright for Starfinder with the introduction of a brand new player class. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Thirsty?
Player class that no one saw coming.
No one saw coming, except Thirsty.
It's true. It's true. The precog. So the precog is for an upcoming triple-checking unannounced book that we have. That we wanted to get some like early playtesting in on. I was the person responsible for doing the principal writing on the class. Obviously, these classes are always kind of like a big group effort from the Star Chamber. We all pitch ideas, and I'll tell you some behind the scenes stuff on that process in a bit. But we pitch ideas together, eventually come up with the core concept of a class, and then someone has to write it. And in this case, I was like, gimme. So I kind of leapt on that and did principal writing, and then Joe Pacini, the lead designer for Starfinder, he came in and took my chicken scratch words that were like the entire right hand side of Word was filled with comments where I'm like, this is balanced against this ability, see this page, see this.
Oh,
and he's
wow.
Like, okay, oh yeah, like for classes, like I don't do a lot of design work, but when I do design work, I try to drill in as much as I can to what's the old, like, you know, the old like elementary school, like, prove your answer. Well,
the proofs. Yeah,
that's right. So the precog is this fancy new class, which is a class that's all about sort of the like the flow of time and like the past and the future, and is a spellcaster, so, you know, a new 6th level spellcaster, but with a very unique spin compared to other spellcasting classes, and honestly, other classes in general.
Obviously, the new unique spin is something time magic, something future. But how would you say that fits into the game as opposed to the other classes? What niche do they really feel? Do they really fill?
We've had a lot of different sort of spellcaster classes. You look at something like the Mystic. They have some like good offensive powers. They also have some like really good like buffs for allies. Technomancers also fill like a similar niche, but their spell selections are different. The Technomancer also has sort of like some buffs, less on the healing side, but also some like, hey, I can pew pew when I need to. And then you have the Witch Warper, which the Witch Warper from the Character Operations Manual was way more of a class that was about like area control and like what we would call a control class in a lot of respects. What the precog represents is less of an overt control class and more of like a self buff, a caster who can really like bring to the fore a lot of abilities, and then depending on their selection can fit a lot of roles. I'd say more than a lot of spellcaster classes we have, and this is all like an asterisk playtest pending. Sure. This is really a class that has just a lot of different roles that they can fill depending on the sort of abilities that they take, and those abilities being in the form of their temporal anomalies that they can sort of pick and choose. And you can really have like a precog that is entirely about, you know, being a spellcaster who eventually gets a full base attack bonus, who you know, is really good for themselves but not really anyone else. Or you could have someone who is like focused on a lot of abilities that mesh well within a party dynamic, and that's sort of the way we've looked at this class.
So one thing about the precog that I, you know, from what I've seen reading on the forums, checking out different Reddits, the thing that seems everybody is talking about is the fact that its spellcasting is very unique in that it uses a ability score that I don't think any spellcaster made by an official Paizo product across any of their games has ever used before. Can you tell us a little bit about the dex spellcasting that this class has?
Sure. Let me give you we're gonna pull back the curtain. I can't drag the curtain into the screen. But so when I wrote this class, spoiler alert, it was a wisdom-based class. And I was like, there is no way that this could be a dex-based class. But in my meticulous comments, I'm like, what if it was a dex-based class? And then Joe Pacini, our lead developer, messaged me out of the blue one day. He was like, what if it was a dex-based class?
Oh, no. Like,
oh, color me intrigued. And honestly, the more we sort of talked about it internally, like from my perspective as someone who plays the game, you know, pretty frequently, works on the game, one of the things that I really had as a goal with this class is trying to balance out its core ability. And I'm gonna step away from dex-based spellcasting for a sec and go into its core ability, which is paradoxes, which the quick and dirty is at the beginning of the day, they get a certain number of paradoxes, and those paradoxes are essentially pre-rolls that they can make on d20s. And then they can substitute those pre-rolls in for various things throughout the day.
Okay.
But there's not a lot of it with this class numerical increases. You're not seeing a lot of like, this gets a plus X bonus to this ability, or this gets a, you know, flat extra damage. You're not seeing a lot of that in this class, because it's balanced against the fact that at the beginning of the day, if you roll like a 20, you have a guaranteed crit whenever you want it that day. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of this class is based on that fundamental of, yeah, you've got all these like cool things you can sort of slot in, but comparative to other classes that are getting stacking bonuses, they're getting all of these abilities, the precog is very much reliant on these paradoxes. So when it came to us designing the spell casting stat, like that more and more made sense, because it's not like having high spell DCs and like having a high attack is going to really break things, because numerically they're not going to be higher than other classes that are, say, getting like bonuses to skills, bonuses from, you know, various things in their class. There aren't as many of those with the precog abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. This is the only class I've seen that doesn't get a scaling insight bonus to a couple skills. Like, I think Vanguard is the only one that kind of comes close. They just get a +2 that never goes up. Everyone else goes up to +6.
Yeah, and it was good.
I was going to say, on the other hand, they're the class that's going to get the most out of something like skill focus.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. They're going to get the most out of skill focus. And they're also going to be that class that if they roll that 20 or that high number, they're going to, on a skew, generally do pretty good on skill checks if it's really important. And this class is very focused on what if it's really important. Like, you as the player have to look into the future yourself in a way and be like, is this the important fight? Is this where I burn that 20? Is this where, you know, and that is a very different concept for a class, I think.
Indeed, especially when you're talking about like the bonus not really being like a number on your die. It's more like the bonus is the fact that like, oh, I rolled a 14 for my paradigm. I could guarantee a 14 on this roll, which I can calculate. It's almost like premeditative for like, it's like pre-cogging ever. Oh gosh, the name makes sense. It's like, oh, come on. But yeah, it's a very different style of play. What were there any concerns about balancing something that is essentially, you know, that on that one most important role you're going to always pass? Like, what kind of balancing act did you guys have to do to pull that off?
So once again, behind the curtain, some things I did when one of the key people who really gave me some like good inspiration when I was starting this was Jason Keeley, another one of our developers. Him and I bounced a bunch of ideas off each other. He kind of helped me form what became the paradoxes. But early on, and in fact in my original turnover for it, one of the sort of drawbacks that I'd built into this was, what if for every paradox you had, your resolve pool went down by an equal amount? And so when you would spend the paradoxes, your resolve pool would go back up. So you were like, the more paradox you held on to, the closer to death you were kind of skirting. So there was like incentive to like use all your paradox. And that like had a lot of bookkeeping and like I think it was a neat concept, but it had a lot of bookkeeping. And when I like ended up talking with Joe about it and we started going through that process of balancing it, we realized like a lot of this class's abilities also are based on those paradoxes, and you're only getting a set number of them. So yes, you're going to get like the chance to get a high number throughout the day. But that's replacing like every other class's abilities. And even when you look at it being like a 6-level spellcaster, a lot of existing spellcasters get a lot of their oomph from some of their class abilities that they can take. That's really where the flavor is. And so when we've got this sort of point system that if you want to be awesome, you've got to spend these points, also further penalizing them was a bit too much. So I think right now we're in this situation where we've really looked at that, like, and part of it is this is a playtest. So asterisks again, this is a playtest, so something like, what is the effective power level of getting a bunch of pre-rolls in the day? That's what we're trying to find out.
I think what's so interesting about it is, like, you know, you could have a really bad string of D20s and they're all bad. Like, but then you're almost incentivized, like, you know, if I roll 5 D20s, I get a 20, an 11, a 10, a 7, a 3, a 2. Like, you're incentivized is to take paradoxes that will let you throw away the bad ones first and covet and hold on to that precious D20 until you absolutely can't hold it on any longer and you chuck it.
Absolutely. And some of the abilities, like one of the ones I know that when people saw it, they're like, oh, that's like really, really cool. I'm trying to remember the name of it now, because of course it's been a while. temporal aggression, that's the one, where you're like, you can sub damage dice results for like your paradox. So like rolling like an 8 typically isn't that good. Like, you know, I wanted like my 15 plus, but rolling an 8 and subbing that in on a D8 damage is suddenly like really useful in some circumstances. And so that was kind of one of the other ways. Like, I really wanted to try to have a situation where those low numbers could impact, or if they weren't just being point spotter, they also could like sneak in for things where those lower results would matter. Not so much. One of the like the more core tenets of this, and there are certainly like debuffs and things the class gets access to, but generally the class is more about like buffing itself, even like temporary helping out allies. It's less of a debuff class, and a lot of that comes down to us, one, not wanting to step on the Witch Warper's toes, which a lot of what their class is supposed to be is manipulating reality, doing area stuff. The other thing is avoiding awkward situations. As y'all know, I come from an organized play background, and when we bandied this class around internally as like, let's do this class, I kind of had a heart attack on the call, because I was like, don't be rerolls the class. Don't be rerolls the class. Because coming from org play, we all know that rerolls can have a heavy influence on our games, especially when you give them out through a variety of different means. So having a class that was all about rerolls was like really, really stressful. And so when we kind of came to like figuring out what would make this class different, one of them was, we did like, my core tenant was no rerolls ever. Like, this won't be a class that just lets you reroll a check, even though you would normally think that's what like a pre-crog might let you do. Exactly. But the other reason is because, yeah, it's more about buffing itself in a way that it like can slightly control. And that's what this class is really about, is kind of about themselves. They're somewhat of a greedy class, though there are some really cool things that they can do that can benefit in a party situation. Certain of their temporal anomalies can be really interesting in party settings.
Can we talk about one thing that they can do? Like, normally we don't talk about capstones very often. Mm-hmm. The capstone for this class is like honestly one of the coolest capstones I've ever seen. Like, it's like I've never seen a class that does the rewriting yourself with timelines as good as this precog ability. And for anyone who's listening who doesn't have the precog in front of them, basically what it does is, like, you know, you get your normal timey-wimey stuff. You don't age, you can't die of old age. But like, you get like a pool of rewriting yourself for using mnemonic editors. But like, I'm assuming from this, it doesn't count as actually using a mnemonic editor. Nope. You just are like, hey, two levels of my precog classes, I'm going to change them. The only rule is that if you took a level in precog, you can't sub it for a different level, which means you're a 20th level character. You can't actually change your class levels, but you could change all those decisions. Can we talk about that? Because that is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That one is like oddly very, like very unchanged from my turnover. Cause again, org play background, I often deal with the community in a lot of ways. And one thing I continually hear is like, there's not enough rebuild options in Starfinder. We need more pictures of rebuild options. And so like that's always been stuck in my head. And so when it came to the end of the class, like, you want something that's cool and unique. And a lot of the capstone abilities for classes are like cool and thematic things. But again, I didn't want something that was just like, here's a numerical bonus. Here's like 8 extra paradox points. Cause that's just, by that point, it's just a weird ism. And so as I was going through and trying to figure out what would work, I was like, they can just rewrite time. So why don't they just rewrite themselves? And as long as they aren't like, my 20th level precog is now going to be my 20th level, like, I don't know, 8th level operative, 12th level, pick your flavor, cheese balloon munchkin. as long as it was still like in that precog layer, I was like, yeah, that's a really, really thematic thing that they do. And you see that like in all sorts. And this entire class is like TV Tropes, the timeline class. But like you see that in so many like time related pieces of media where something happens, like, you know, we changed the past and now suddenly I'm entirely different, you know? And so factoring that into the class was something I had a lot of fun with that
ability. Yeah. Oh no. Speaking about like things that are thematically appropriate and I would say very brave about this class, let's talk about the anchor mechanic, which kind of works almost like their mystic connection in a way. One of the things I noticed about these is very different from pretty much any class I've ever seen is that these anchors are very much tied to the Starfinder universe. Like, one of them is flat out called your anchor is the gap.
Absolutely. So that was one of those weird elements that when we talked about the class and did the internal discussions, there was a lot of like, okay, what can we pull in from the setting? And like we obviously, like, one of the primogenitor ideas for this was like, we should do the Chronomancer, and like, okay, but what does that mean? And figuring it out from in terms of our setting. And as we kind of got discussing like time and how it works, there were a couple like cornerstone pieces, like the gap. And one of the things like I really pushed for, some of the other people on the team really pushed for, was we want a class that can actually interact with the gap in some way, because that is this cornerstone of our setting. And we don't have to answer anything. There's a lot of good media out there where people have crazy powers that they don't necessarily have to have like the answer for why or how it happened. In fact, in many ways, that's like a whole campaign seed that you can play with.
Definitely.
And so when it came time to sort of come up with the connections equivalent, as we called them, one of the things that I had was there were certain ones in the setting that I really wanted to hit. The gap was one of them because obvious reasons it ties into time already. We had the dimension of time. That's something that exists in Pathfinder. It exists in Starfinder. So we wanted to have some connection with that. We've talked about like time magic before. I think the write-up even mentions Shaika, the Fey elder, like that's associated with that. And so those were all like very core concepts. And then we had like the other anchors, which were more I don't want to say more generic, but more, this is something you as the player and the GM in many ways can like narratively work into a campaign. So we have like the doomed future, which like is directly inspired from Terminator. Let's not like kid ourselves here. I'm not going to say that this class allows you to take a doomed future anchor and then get a bunch of abilities that basically turn you into a full bab, higher HP, not, we'll say, con genre type of character. But that is such a trope. And so when writing it up, there's obviously Starfinder like twists on that trope. I mean, the whole doomed future is not just the domain of Terminator. I'm using it as a quintessential example. Sure. But like in our setting, there's so many examples of that. Like, yeah, the swarm eats everything. Mm-hmm. Great old ones eat everything. Like there's all sorts of weird stuff that can happen.
Oh yeah. I can think of a dozen character concepts from it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we sort of have like the fragmented past anchor, which that like I pulled from my like horror buffdom of the like very similar to like the Final Destination series of horror movies, where like there is like one point in time where something messes up that happens that wasn't supposed to happen, and like your powers are divested from that. And like what that means, like it's very broad, but can fit really cool into a Starfinder campaign and into a character. So some of these, you really want them to be a bit more broad. I mean, time warped as it exists right now, I think in the original was like essentially like time machine the anchor, which allows you to have that kind of connection through ancient technology that you might find. And what this also does is, while we're taking from the setting and like creating like the gap and the dimension of time, some of these actually allow us to seed things in later that then you can build off. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the future you would see like there is some alien species out there that had time travel testing technology, and maybe an NPC is related to that. Like that's the type of stuff this class lets us do, which is very exciting.
Maybe someone turned on a large hadron collider and just, you know, completely broke reality.
It's really cool. Like you could even make the argument that like if you're sitting down to play a Paizo Adventure Path and you want to play this class, you could be like, oh yeah, your character comes from a future where the Adventure Path failed, and so now you're like you're completely tied to that Adventure Path. It's like player guide the class option.
It could be actually really fun to work with the GM, especially if they give you, you know, if you as a player don't really know what happens, but they can give you little insights to flavor the adventure. That's a good idea.
And some of the abilities in these, like if you look at the time warped anchor, which is essentially you as a full action can go somewhere that's essentially an out of time little like bubble area. Again, inspired from some media, like if you remember the movie 12 Monkeys, like Bruce Willis gets like ripped into the future sometimes. That kind of style of, hey, you could have this area where your character's basically being ripped out of time to go to their shelter or whatever. And that gives the GM all this control of like, okay, but like, who are they communing with there? What's going on there? You know?
So if I wanted to make Marty McFly this class, which anchor would I take?
I mean, there's a lot of options for Marty. I mean, probably time warped. I mean, depending how like nihilistic you are, you can go in the future. I mean,
fuck.
I also won't say that the Ephemeral Confidant allows you to essentially take something directly out of a TV show. that is, you have an invisible confidant only you can see who gives you important information.
Oh, no.
which I was like, man, you know what's great? We already have an NPC in our setting named Ziggy. This totally works in canon.
That's funny.
Oh, no. So
if I wanted to play, gosh, I can't remember the name of the TV show, and I should because I know, but it's the one with the tagline is always hoping that the next jump is the last jump home. If I wanted to do that with this class, could I do that?
Is that Sliders?
Yeah, I was about to say, are you going Sliders or do you mean Quantum Leap?
I think I mean Quantum Leap.
I mean, Scott Bakula in Quantum Leap is yes, exactly what the Ephemeral Confidant will let you do.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Which was one of those, like, again, a lot of this class is tropey media, but also pulling in a lot of very specific stuff to our set.
This is more like, it seems like Quantum Leap sort of tropes versus Sliders is more like the Witch Warpers sort of tropes of alternate realities. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know what? I think that a strong class needs to be able to stand on its own in terms of the setting. But I think that you also know that a class is quality when you look at its options and you're like, oh, I can use this to build X from my favorite Y, because how many people sit down and they're like, oh, I want to play this character from my favorite TV show in my tabletop role-playing game. And I think the fact that you can look at the precog and see so many time-based protagonists throughout pretty much all sorts of different media, I think that's a strength, not something you should be smacked on the wrists for.
It's a balance, right? One of the things I wanted to make sure we weren't doing was create the Gapomancer, where it's only the gap and everything's the gap, and
right,
and you're buying jeans, I guess, from the gap. But realistically, having it be related to the setting is very important, but also having it be general enough so that someone who looks at it can go glomp onto the idea. You read precog and you're like, okay, I get it, some kind of future related stuff. And then you open it up and you kind of peruse through it and you go, oh, these are immediately identifying where some of these tropes are being pulled from gives you character ideas. And in a lot of cases, I know that there's always, two camps of the I am the Puritan person who must have the Holy Knight of Iomade, who knows all of Iomade's tenets, and or, Joe, who shows up to the table and is like, I would like to play Paladin McPaladin. I don't know about this setting, but I would like to play the Space Paladin. This class gives you that sort of ability, to look at it and go, oh, I get these tropes. I can jump in on these tropes. Sweet. Or I don't get these. I don't really want to have, Marty McFly or John Connor in my games. But this gap thing really interests me because I'm a giant lore nerd. And one of the immediate things is gosh, you probably want to play an elf with the gap anchor because you were probably alive then. And there's all the connections and you can do all this neat lore stuff.
There are all the connections, but I can't see any of them.
Yeah, or you feel like Kizhar and the Time Warps where they use the technology because they lost all their stuff. There's a lot of good little seeds there. And I think tropes are sometimes viewed negatively because there's definitely tropes in just base role-playing game stuff. When you see a paladin and you see the ability that's kill that guy, oh, that's smite. I know what that's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I totally, man, you could also do, what are the names of the ones that that Rob McCreary loves, the roly-poly dudes, the Bantrid? Bantrid. Yeah. You could do a Bantrid who's I'm connected to us before we went to sleep forever. This is amazing. Yeah. Look at us. I'm awake. My time powers. No.
And some of the time powers and the way we sort of describe how the anchors work is some of them aren't rooted in the future. They're rooted in the past. And so there's an interesting dynamic with that.
Could I be a character of a doomed past and my powers come from the dinosaurs getting wiped out?
Theoretically, I would allow it as a GM, but I'm awesome, so.
I mean, it's true. I've heard you have your own show that has a huge following, right? Yeah.
Something like that.
Humble brag a little. It's fine.
We have one question from the audience. Our very own Dustin Knight would like to know, can I send text messages to myself in the past?
I mean, if you wanted to flavor, that's what your ephemeral confidant is. Absolutely.
You're like, receiving all these text messages. You're like, who are you texting? Texting myself.
Myself. Give me the answer.
God, you know, if Marty McFly had like a cell phone and could text himself across time, he would do it nonstop in the future. It would just, they'd have to change the name of the series to Text from the Future.
I mean, there is a character. I mean, if you've ever played Apex Legends, Wraith has an ability where she, dimension and time are kind of the same thing when you have a dimension of time, but she has the ability to have other timelines tell her when bad things are happening, like when people are looking at you. So, like, you can expand that to be that.
That's true.
And there's some abilities in here that obviously like play on some of those ideas. Trying to remember the name. See, I remember, like, I'm really bad because I remember, like, I totally remember what the ability is. I just forget exactly what we ended up naming it.
Well, and the thing is that some of the names are just fantastic. You have one called Butterfly Effect, Desperate Rewrite.
My favorite is I Knew You'd Say That.
I was going to bring that up. I knew you'd say that. That's so good.
I have a story about that ability.
Please.
So I'm writing this class on a weekend, and I'm at the point where I'm now just throwing in all the anomalies. Like, I've got the core of the class done. I'm filling in the anomalies. And again, very, very meticulous. Like, I have a spreadsheet up that tells me all the numbers that I have at each level and trying to make sure I've got like a balanced thing, more at the lower and higher at the top. And I've got some gaps, and I'm explaining this because I like walk around the house because, you know, that's what reality is now. I get to walk all of 10 feet for my pacing. And I like am talking to my partner about this, and she just looks at me and she's like, you have to have an ability that's called I Knew You Would Say That. And I'm just like, and I look at her and she's like, I don't know what it does either. That's up to you to figure out. And so I did.
I mean, it's, well, just so
you funny. Tell your partner that it's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Things like that are just so much fun because they're on the level of like get 'em or something, which is fun to say at the table, right?
Get 'em. Get 'em.
In this case, what you ended up making it do is you get an aid another action to assist an ally with like a social check. And so it's just really fun if they're having this role play interaction and you can just like sort of grin and be like, I knew you'd say that. And then at some point, everyone at the table knows exactly what that is.
And like you could do that. And the neat thing about like specifically how that ability works is like you can be sitting on that 20 and you can have like Envoy McEnvoy face who is there and is like, hello, like space nobility, I am here to get into your treasury. I'm going to diplomacy to get into your treasury. I roll a one, and this isn't org play, so I don't have any other rerolls. And I'm like, oh. But the precog can then again slide on in and be like, oh, I knew you'd say that. Bam, here's my 20. And then, you know, and that's an example of what we talked about earlier, where the precog can help out these classes.
Definitely.
And there's another really good ability, one that actually like I came up with as a like, I know how people think at the table. I've seen my fair share of players called instance analysis, which is this anomaly that is you can select an ally within 60 feet and then choose one of their ability spells or weapons and then choose a target within 60 feet and basically go, will this work on that? And it will tell you like whether the target has immunity, damage reduction, spell resistance, any of that stuff to that selected ability or weapon.
That is actually super, super cool.
I can tell you that Dustin Knight would love that. He would love it so much.
And it's one of those abilities that like you think about like how a precog would work at like seeing into the future. Like you obviously, it has to be different flavor from like recall knowledge, for example, of like, oh, I identify it and I know this. This is more like, I look at the frost gun. I look at the lava golem and I think, and I look into the future a little bit and I go, do it now. Like, and so like flavoring that is an ability.
Yeah, I do like too that it doesn't actually require you to use a precog. It's just like a once every 10 minutes. So you can use it like between encounters.
Yeah, that was one of those interesting things that came from the development on this. And that was Joe really like a lot of these abilities originally were just like spend points. And some of them we kind of revised and we're like, it doesn't really need to spend the points. Like this is something that you get more benefit out of and it's not worth like spending your be awesome points. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of tweaking like that, which is where that whole like design development pass really pays off.
I think that's smart because I think that the Witch Warper kind of falls into that trap where everything spends spell slots. And it's like, wait, please, just let me do the thing. Please, I want to be battlefield control. Don't make me use another spell slot, please. And it's cool to see this class like not really like rely as much on its resource. I mean, like it's important, but
yeah.
You know.
Speaking of class design, one thing I was curious about, the document clearly talks about how this is a playtest of the class. This is not necessarily what you're going to see in the final hardback edition book when it's released, and that you specifically have things in there that are a little outside the normal, a little bit pushing the envelope of the system to see what it can do and what it can break. And now I know you mentioned dexterity-based spellcasting as one of those things. What are some other elements that you feel is really pushing the envelope of Starfinder design in this class?
The pre-roll mechanic as a whole is just something that, like, it is very difficult to quantifiably put a value on it because you could have really good days, you could have really bad days. Does like pre-rolling the like three chances at a 20, does that equate to being better than getting a +4 on all of your skill checks? Like that's something that is very much in the balance here. Dex obviously is one, but like one of the ones I've seen a lot of people like jump on, and I go to my Terminator reference of building your John Connor, future training and times champion, which are you get more like hit points and stamina points, and then you can eventually just get a full base attack bonus with this class. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people look at that and go, my pearls, sky is falling. But really, is the sky falling when the class itself doesn't have like when you're investing all of what are effectively your class options to get those bonuses. And so it's a lot of like figuring that out. And so we'd rather push a bit further to see like if people go, no, this is entirely broken, or you know, the people who actually make that class go like, yeah, I'm able to like, if I'm the numbers person, I'm able to get, you know, this high BAB spellcaster, but realistically, like, am I going to shoot my gun when I can cast my high-level spells? Like, we all know how action economy works in this game. A lot of combats are over in, like, 5 rounds. Sure. And so there's just a lot of that type of pushing that we want to see. And some of the just the abilities and how they work. Another one of those abilities that I think is an example of, like, is this gonna cause problems, is the momentary stutter, which is the like you can move and then you can basically jump back to where you started the turn. Mm-hmm. And does that like cause problems in any ways? It's just a matter of like figuring out with some of those options.
I think it's really interesting because like for me the two options that you take that turn you basically into, it's almost like the transformation spell from first edition Pathfinder where it just gives you the hit points and whatnot. I never really thought those were any of things in this class that were really pushing the envelope personally. If only because like, you know, granted Philadelphia is weird, but James and I play with tons of technomancers who just go junk sword and we see them do so much damage with 3/4 BAB and like no other real attack bonuses. So I'm just like, do you need this full base attack bonus? Like, and for me, I'm like, oh, that just lets you use kinetic weapons. Cool. Like that's not too strong, but like, and then there's so many people who are like, oh my gosh, it's so strong. I'm like, but you don't have onslaught. Where's the onslaught? You gotta have that onslaught.
Oh my god, we have so many. We have just a bunch of cavemen. We give them guns, we give them technology, we give them magic, and they go, magic makes sword.
Ah, magic makes sword. I hate you with sword. But that's also why, like, I included in pushing the envelope, because mark my words, if we just published a class that was a dex-based spellcaster with full bab and high hit points, like, we could have the worst class abilities ever in that class, and people would look at it and go, oh, this is broken. Like, those people at Piazio don't know what they're doing with this class.
Those Piazians.
Yeah, like... And so putting it in as a class ability where you are having to make a choice to invest in it, and again you're doing it because there's kind of a theme involved in doing it, like as you're going along this, like, you know, your path towards your doomed future, for example, you're becoming more battle hardened and more like a soldier without multi-classing. That's something that's in the class. Like, is it going to break things? Like, I personally don't think so, but that's why we do playtests.
Sure. Yeah, get it out there in people's hands where you can sort of crowdsource breaking the game and see who comes up with what wacky rules combination.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think one of the bigger things, or one of the more fun things to look at, is because its spell list is very inspired by a lot of other classes' spell lists. Mm-hmm. I think in the playtest, it has three unique spells, but then it has a very large overlap between spells from the Mystic and spells from the Technomancer, where you have somebody that does both Restoration and Fireball, Explosive Blast, and Persistent Casting, Prescience Casting, sorry. That's a second level ability that emulates a higher level feat. I think you're going to see a lot of Technomancers at level 2 die. They're going to cast something and they're going to get it off, and then something's going to realize they're a threat, they're going to get slapped, but I wonder how that scales, an equivalent to a feat that does that later on.
Interesting, yeah. I think for me, the one ability that I think personally might be an issue and is Chromatic Flow. It's a 12th level ability where you spend a paradox to boost the spell DC of a spell you cast by a maximum of 2, depending on the DC of the paradox you use. And by 19th level, you can boost a spell's DC by 4. And I am of the personal opinion that save and suck spells in Starfinder need help. So I don't necessarily think that ability is unwarranted, but I feel like something like that ability should probably be with the Witchwarper, whose entire spell list is save or suck abilities. Just to me, like, that ability, like, if anything is going to push the power envelope of Starfinder, it's Chromatic Flow. That's my opinion.
And I think it comes down, like, a lot of when we do design and balancing, is it comes down to what level it's appropriate at. Like, you get it at 12th level. Okay, at 12th level is a, let's say, 3 to 4 time per day plus 2 mod, like, DC on a spell. Is that going to be the big deal? And, like, that's something we have to look at. Like, when you get up to 16th and 19th level, I become a little less worried of some of those, like, numerical multipliers, because by that point people are just like, the operative hits you once, salute. So it's interesting, because also, like, people will have different reactions. So, like, we, you know, just before we were talking about, like, full base attack bonus and extra hit points on a full spellcaster who uses dex. That's not too much. And then Alex comes and is like, but increasing that spell TC by a couple of numbers, that could be the one. And I'm not meaning to pick on you. Yeah, I mean, like, everyone, like, looks at their own little thing where they, like, have personal experience. They have knowledge of the system. Yeah. And that's why a playtest is great, because you might be the person who goes, yes, but that's +2 on these, you know, these spells is super powerful in this situation, or, you know, and it's sort of a matter of figuring that out, which is why I highly recommend everyone go to paizo.com/Starfinder playtest and take part in the playtest. Shameless plug.
No, that's what you're here for. You're supposed to plug. You're doing your job.
Is there any media that you think the playtest would, that you want information from? I know you want all requests, but is there anything specifically, like AP material, home material, that's very valuable?
Starfinder Society scenarios. It's all for Thirsty Can Trust.
I mean, like, honestly, I think however people are playing, like, my biggest thing is, of course, like, play a game with it. Also, if you can try it at different levels, try it at different levels. That's why with the Pathfinder Society playtest, which I should also shamelessly, or sorry, Starfinder Society playtest, which I should shamelessly plug, you're allowed to kind of make that pre-gen-esque character of like first, fourth, or eighth level, which gives us a good, like, a good variety. Obviously, I'd love it if people could like run some home games and stuff and do some high-level Starfinder. We have Devastation Arc right now. Feel free to just toss in a precog into a couple of those encounters, you know. It would really help us and give us that information. I think just getting it from all sort of varieties, but really it's when I look at a class, I know there are people on our additional resources team who might like also be clutching their heart right now when I say this. My biggest concern when a class comes in and the feedback is, you know, can you describe if this was fun or not? And that sounds like a like weird like statement to make, but you can have a super mechanically balanced class that, you know, is great, but if it's not fun at the table, that's a problem. And so something I really want people to do as they look into this class and dig into it is, you know, find out, are you having fun playing this? Are other players at the table having fun with this being a thing? Like, that's something, that's a piece of feedback that I really am interested in seeing.
That's one of the reasons I asked you about which mechanics or features of the class were the most experimental, to hopefully anyone who's hearing this and is going to give feedback on the playtest can really look out for those abilities and how they impacted their game.
Definitely. So we went over, gosh, pretty much everything. We talked about spells, paradoxes, anchors, the temporal anomalies, like you name it, we talked about it. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on, Thirsty, that you really want to shout out with involving this class?
Oh gosh, as I said, this is like a team project. Again, like way behind the curtain times. I think I mentioned when we first pitched this class, I had like visions of reroll the class. I actually, when we originally pitched this idea, I was vehemently opposed to it. And then, like the person who saw the future, I somehow realized that, no, I actually really like this and I want to write it. I mean, part of it was also probably because I didn't want rerolls the class. So I immediately jumped on the grenade being like, please. But overall, like, this has just been a giant team effort. I mean, everyone on the team has been involved with it. I've bounced, you know, the paradox mechanic off of basically everyone on the team. I got creative input on some of the more narrative elements, like the gap and whatnot, like from talking with Rob, John Compton, who, you know, I could throw, like, I am looking at doing this with a temporal anomaly. Tell me no. And just sort of that that team dynamic is very important here. So when we talk about this, it's just important to know that, like, no one person didn't write this. This is a group thing. I mean, I did the initial words, but then this went through dev pass. This went through a whole bunch of things. This is like when it's reached the stage where it's polished enough that we want to show it off and get that feedback. And the feedback isn't intended to be like, we have to do Paizo's work for them. It's more because we want to make sure that this class, when it eventually comes out in whatever product it's coming out in, we want to make sure that when it actually gets released, it's something that people are going to enjoy.
Definitely cool. All right. Well, I guess we've got about 10 minutes left in the show. Anything you want to plug, talk about? Anything you want to plug, talk about?
So, yeah. On a personal level.
Yeah, sure. You gave us like 50 minutes of hardcore, super in-depth, behind the curtains review of the precog. The least I could do is let you plug your actual play, Thirsty.
Oh gosh. Okay. So first of all, it's not my actual play. You'll notice this. I don't like claiming ownership on group things. That's cool. The actual
play of which you are a part of.
Of which I do some for. I GM off and on for this program called Warhams. It's a Warhammer Wrath and Glory role-playing game actual play that I GM for. It's the producer of that is Peyton from Paizo. You've probably seen him on Band of Bravos playing that Lauren Barnes character, or you know, in various other projects. We've been doing that for, oh gosh, like several months now, and it's been super, super fun. You can find us on the YouTubes at youtube.com/ZoranTheBear, or, you know, twitch.tv, that's the one, /ZoranTheBear. We do every second Saturday, which is this Saturday. We got an episode coming up in which, I don't know, I do funny voices, like they have an NPC who's just like, I don't know, an overweight version of Sylvester Stallone who goes de roll all the time. And then people like it, and they, I don't know, they come and hang out with us at some time. We do all sorts of fun.
We should get you to do like canon voices for like Ziggy and whatnot. It'll be good. Good stuff. No.
That's dangerous. This is traipsing into territory of like origins.
Cut the mic.
When we did the first interactive special, and Luaziel Sebo had that like southern bell voice, which has like carried through to many locations now. It's weird how these things go. It became worse because then the following year, Jed Nura got like a Minnesotan accent. Also, like, oh, hey there, Starfinders. Looks like you gotta go back in under scoured stars, eh? Like, don't trust me with voices. It's a bad and dangerous prospect.
Just add it to the list of reasons Starfinders don't like Jed Nura. It'll be fine.
He gives them replays. That's why they keep crawling back.
Oh my god!
After actually gets them murdered. Yes.
Yeah, but he's also the one who was literally like, "Hey, so I screwed this up. Can you go back and figure out what I missed?"
Yeah.
Can you just go back there? It's great. Yeah.
You just go back and like figure out how I screwed up, because I know I did, but I don't really know how. So.
Gosh, there was someone recently. It was, well, not recently, a couple weeks ago, who posted on one of the Facebook groups and was like, "That venture captain Arvin is the worst. like what a jerk!" And everyone's like, "You mean the venture captain who takes us out for dinner and sends us to arcades after our missions? You have clearly never played Pathfinder Society. So you should attend the Hydemark Manor for once or twice.
Just go play season 4 of Pathfinder Society, oh then tell us if
and
you think
come back.
For yeah. Every bathtub you've ever seen.
Oh my gosh. Or the low seasons, like 0 and 1, where Adrol Hestrum and his buddies are like, "What are you worthless group of recruits doing here?" You're like, "Dude, we're 8th level." He's like, "Get out there and don't fail."
my favorite part is still going to be the one where Drendel Drang mechanically comes into your room and wakes you up in the middle.
Just breaks into your room.
Literally.
Get up.
Let's just say that like when the Starfinder Society lore says that like their hierarchy is based on a pre-gap organization of a similar name, I'm really glad that like they didn't take all of the OSHA violations into the middle of the future.
that was actually like it, like we're slightly off topic, but I'll give it to you. That was actually one of like the things when I came into Starfinder Society that like was one of my first like pull out the stick, draw the line in the sand when we had our initial meetings. I'm like, I do not want the Starfinder Society to be led by any sort of masked individual or individuals. Please. Mm-hmm.
You mean war criminals?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. And like that was also a big thing in Starfinder season 2, where I wanted to call out, like, you know, it's kind of awkward that there's this group that unilaterally took military action in another star system. Like, maybe we should be questioning these people.
I'll tell you, we enjoyed that so much in all of our society play. Each time, just going, "Yeah, man, are we the bad guys?
Yeah.
Are we the baddies?"
Yeah, exactly.
Season 4, Datch had a point.
I always have to bite my tongue because there's so many like, you know, lore things that are totally unexplained yet, and one day I will get to explain them all, but like there's so much of that in my head canon for Starfinder Society and where it goes and things we can tackle, and
so fun.
That's a whole episode unto itself of things I could tell you.
Oh, but the question is, would you really want to precog us all of those secrets of the future, or do you want us to just find it on our own?
All I'll say is that there was a couple, like, I want to say a month ago, we had a meeting, and we have Alex, who has joined the organized play team, is helping out Tanya a lot mm-hmm. with the sort of volunteer side of things. And in a meeting, I had to, because of various things we were discussing, I had to explain what the reason for Salvation's End was and like what the big reveal was. And like, he just kind of paled and went white when I explained it. And I'm looking forward to that reaction on a community level one day. like how my Into the Perplexity game is out. So if you have a 4-star GM in your area, you should go play that. You too can like leak tears like all the players who've been at my Perplexity tables have.
My favorite one is the part of that scenario where it says, if you play this, you cannot tell anybody about what you saw. It is against the rules of the Starfinder Society. And it's like, oh no, please. Mm-hmm. I'm so bad at secrets, fam.
I don't know. I was pretty impressed. I ran it for like, gosh, like 20 odd tables now. And like, no one's had like major leaks. So that's been success. We'll see how it does on a global scale. I don't have high hopes, but it's not my problem. I sold it to Paizo. They paid me. I've got like a check or something on the table here.
You're like, yes, the money, those medium bucks.
Yeah. Those supplementary bucks that bring me up to the slightly above average medium bucks. Thanks, freelancing.
Woo. Freelancing, paying the rent. Mm-hmm.
Oh, never right.
Played that scenario. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's just, I don't think we have a 4-star GM in Philadelphia yet, do we? No, we no. So the thing is, in Philadelphia, we're really good about taking turns. Like, we have multiple people who like, oh, I'll run this week, I'll run that week. So we don't have someone who's just like eating them all.
If only we knew someone who was on the call who could run it online for us. Who could that person be?
Is it you, Vanessa?
Oh, I'm not a 4-star GM. Vanessa.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I was a 5-star PFS GM, okay? Like, I put my time in.
I did it. No, you gotta do it again. Two more times. It's like World of Warcraft raiding. You did it on normal. Now do it again on heroic.
No.
Good stuff.
I don't want to. No savage raids.
This is more like Shendralar rep, you monster.
Oh no, not that. The rep's so bad they took it out of the game.
I know. I got that insane achievement. I know.
Nice. Nice stuff. Thanks so much for joining us for No Direction Beyond. And thanks so much for coming, Thirsty. You, as always, you are a fountain of entertainment and delight on this show. I hope that we'll be able to see you again in the future. I'd ask you to precog and let us know, but that'd take the fun out of it, wouldn't it?
Hopefully we can talk again soon. Maybe there'll be other things to announce that I can come talk about. Woo!
Ooh, well, woo. Until then, we'll be looking forward to it. And until next time, go beyond with No Direction.